Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
One. Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. Today is March 4th. Our theme today is Standout Women. And we are celebrating International Women's Month, Women's Day, Women's Month, Women in the World. What else? I want to thank Andy Offit Irwin for opening our show today with his original composition, Tarry Here. And want to say that we are an internet radio station. You can see 7 years of past programs at talltales.enlightenedradio.org. How are you? I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stacy Okelski.
Are you sure?
I am. I know my name. You know how I know my name? It's written on a lot of things I own.
You just have to look in your shirt, in your t-shirt to find out who.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. So I haven't seen you for 2 whole weeks.
I know. But something.
I did talk to you, but I haven't seen you. So,
and I just went through a weekend where my wife was away for 60 hours. I was a bachelor for 60 hours.
Possibly survive that.
I had an interesting weekend. Terry left at 5 o'clock on Friday. She flew out of Baltimore on a plane to Salt Lake City. That was Friday morning, 5 a.m. And she arrived back in Baltimore at 3 something p.m. on Sunday and was home by 5:30. And so she was gone for a little over 60 hours and over a 5,000-mile round trip and went out to see our 13-year-old granddaughter who had one of the leads in a production of Wonka. A stage production, by the way. Terry brought home the program. There were 300 children in this stage musical. This school does musicals every year. The school only has 600 children in it. Half the population of the school was in this musical. The set was like something out of Broadway. They had monstrous dance numbers, chorus numbers. They rented all the costumes, or most of the costumes. And it's done very professionally. I've never seen a middle school. Never seen any production at a higher level than this for a school program. I mean, I've worked in professional productions and where I had great money and rented all the costumes. And I don't think ours was any more professional than this one. Terry
well,
was
I'm
very
sorry
impressed.
You missed it. Did you get to see any of it online?
Well, no. It wasn't online or anything. It was, you know, but there, I think there's a CD of it, I think. And I didn't go because I can't, a 60 hour turnaround on four airplane flights would kill me. if the trip had lasted a week, I would gladly go, but I couldn't take 4 airplane flights in less than 60 hours. It's hard enough for me to drive. I drove to Westminster on Friday to go to a lunch with a number of students from the classes of 73 and 74, Franklin High School graduating classes. They have a monthly lunch, these two classes. And there's like 25, 30 people go to it. And they're different groups, different numbers of people, depending on, their availability. And I've been invited a number of times, so I finally decided to go. And I had a great time. But driving by myself to Westminster, the 84 miles, and then coming home that evening, I left the house at 9:30, came home, got home about 5, I guess. I realized I was supposed to go to a basketball game to see my grandson the next day. I called my daughter and said, "I'm sorry, I'm not coming." She said, "Why?" I said, "I was terrified driving by myself all that way." It was horrible. The traffic coming home was so bad. It was like, oh. And I didn't go. So I didn't go the next day. I stayed home Saturday.
Well, I'm glad you had a good time at the reunion.
Oh, it was fun. It was really fun. And people told funny stories about me.
Well, that's during good. Maybe lunch. You can share some.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, before you take a break from talking, tell us about Speak.
Speak story series. The next one up is on March 12th, which, if I'm not mistaken, will be next Tuesday. March 12th, Peter Cook, deaf storyteller, who has an interpreter with him, and I have seen him before, and I believe you have too.
Yes, he is much more than a deaf storyteller. He's an amazing storyteller, truly.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even think you have to say that. You wouldn't have to even say anything. If you see him perform, you might say, "That was different." I don't think I recognize his voice. But he's because wonderful. He is such a wonderful performer. Reminds me of... he's just a great storyteller,
he is.
Right. So anyway,
and people can go to speakstoryseries.com.
right, speakstoryseries.com, and that's where they can get all the information. It is Tuesday at the community center in Shepherdstown, next Tuesday at 7:30 it begins, and if you go to speakstoryseries.com you can get all the information. Ticket price. You can buy a season ticket if you want, or donate money if you want, or, become a member, all kind of things. And yep. It's really worth the while.
Great organization.
Great performings. Right.
And I don't know if you said that's in Shepherdstown, but.
I did. Shepherdstown.
Yes. Okay.
Shepherdstown, West Virginia.
I have some calendar dates too, but I'll wait. To do that. Okay, so do you want to start us out with a story?
I always like to have ladies go first.
You do?
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, I always like you to start. So that, what if somebody was listening and said, "I looked this up and it said that it was Fanny Crawford was on there," and that didn't sound like a Fanny to me. If it was a Fanny, she must have been smoking cigars.
It's not just Fanny today. My lead story is from my mother, Miriam Crawford. And let's see. Mom, are you ready to come in to talk on the radio? Okay. All right. Well, come sit down. Right here. Okay. And you said you were going to... start with a song, right? Yes. Yes, I'm going to start with a song. Hello, Mr. Z.
It's good morning.
Good to see you here on this big screen.
Good to see you too. And your daughter is so consistent. She gives you a hard time just like she gives me a hard time.
Of course she does. She's a young person, All right. Well, I'm not sure how my voice is this morning, but I'm going to try this song to introduce my story. I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night. life as you or me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe. I didn't die, says Joe. I didn't die. And standing there as big as life and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they forgot to kill went on to organize, went on to organize. Joe Hill ain't dead, he says to me. Joe Hill ain't never died. Where working folks are out on strike, Joe Hill is at their side. Joe Hill is at their side. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where working folks defend their rights, it's there you'll find Joe Hill. It's there you'll find Joe Hill. Well, of course, that's an organizing song. And I love that song because it reminds me of where I started in some ways. You know, I'm going to be telling stories at the National Women's Storytelling Festival, the middle of March. Fanny has invited me to go with her. And that story set, she calls it, will be about 50 minutes, I think she said. But this is a little tiny piece of that story set. And, you know, it could change between now and then, and Fanny might badger me to do something a little bit different. But this is what that song is about for me. It's about finding purpose outside myself. Well, when I was released from the Women's Army Corps, honorable discharge, by early 1947, I was hired as adult education director of the New Rochelle Public Library, half an hour north of New York City. In that job, I was responsible for organizing forums on social issues, writing book reviews for the local newspaper, assisting community organizations, and helping young people with their career decisions. That was a pretty broad job description for me, much, much more acreage than I was used to with library jobs. I was also quietly active in local progressive organizations with the American Veterans Community, the AVC, which was at that time an alternative to the American Legion and the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the VFW, for veterans. But it was still disapproved of by a number of progressive organizations, including the Communist Party, because of the Veterans Committee's sort of high-minded liberal failure to recognize realities and actual struggles and needs of returning veterans. Now, like many other vets, I myself used the GI Bill of Rights for financial help. Now, I was very, very lucky to be able to access that money, because most women vets did not get the same treatment. I already had a college degree, and so I had proven myself worthy in the eyes of the administrators of the GI Bill of Rights. And of course, Black veterans, white and Black, were routinely denied or steered into vocational training rather than college-level studies, okay, university studies. You can read all about that in books from the time and newspaper articles, especially the Black press. But I was able to resume my studies in the field of library science and adult education that I'd started in the early 40s at Columbia University, and I finished a master's in education there. I already had a history degree and a library degree. Well, also in 1947, I met Bill Crawford, originally at a couple progressive organizational meetings, and we started dating. Bill was a light-skinned African-American from Western New York State. He was recruited by Henry Wallace's campaign, his third party, Progressive Party campaign, and the Elect the Negro to Congress from the 4th Congressional District campaign. And when that campaign ended, Bill was asked to stay in Philadelphia to assist with other political efforts in the Black community. Well, we stayed in touch, and 2 years later, we decided to get married. I resigned the New Rochelle Library job and moved to Philadelphia. Bill was soon in charge of organizing efforts in several Pennsylvania counties, as well as in Delaware. We had very little money between us. Community organizing did not pay much, but we found a tiny apartment in a very rundown section of altogether rundown Chester, PA. And we worked together in local political activities and in national peace and justice organizations for about 2 years. Our daughter Fanny was born the following year, and we found babysitters and nursery schools so I could continue to work part-time in a series of jobs. But eventually, after our son Doug was born, I went to work as a librarian for Hahnemann Hospital School of Nursing, and then finally at Temple University Library. And that's where I was for until my retirement in the 1970s. While working at Temple and working as a volunteer with the American Library Association, the ALA, I became aware of this exploding student activism on campuses across the country. And the ALA, the Library Association, which I had perceived as an organization barely alive and in great need of resuscitation, held a national conference in Atlantic City, New Jersey, that included a whole new generation of young people. And that conference exploded into several different social justice committee areas with an interest in protecting democracy at home and abroad, interest in ending the Vietnam War and increasing the people of color on the staff of public and university libraries fighting censorship, and generally increasing participation among library workers in the American Library Association. I joined a new group there, the ALA's Social Responsibility Roundtable. And in Philadelphia, I helped organize the Librarian Social Responsibilities Roundtable, taking on leadership roles throughout the 1960s, all the way through the late, to the end of the 1980s. But in 1965, in my professional capacity at Temple, I was given responsibility for the university's historical archives. And at that point, I joined the Society of American Archivists, which assists librarians who are managing special collections. And that organization also underwent transformations, similar to what had occurred at ALA in the 60s. And I took on projects there as well. So I began to recognize that I was having an impact in professional organizations for social and political change in ways that seemed much more productive to me than my even longer term work with peace organizations and various social justice organizations. Trade unions then arrived at Temple, the university, through three competing organizations, the National Education Association, NEA, the American Association of University Professors, the AAUP, and the American Federation of Teachers, the AFT. There were a series of elections with winners and losers shifting several times back and forth each year. And I worked in some of those campaigns, including as the library rep on the AAUP University Professional Executive Committee when that organization was in ascendance. Now, Bill had earlier been fired from a very good long-held job at Lankenau Hospital because he had refused a change in schedule that would have made our childcare arrangements unworkable. And that was a big deal there at the hospital. But soon after that, he was offered a job setting up and managing a community bookstore in West Philadelphia near the University of Pennsylvania that would come to specialize in new and used books, mostly African American and progressive literature. And as we talked it over, we agreed the project was worthwhile, but it was manageable only if we were wholly responsible for the finances and the policies. And as we were trying to figure out how to proceed, we began hearing from friends and community allies who were offering financial support for us in return for future gifts of books as repayment. Now, who as a book lover, you have here an archivist and somebody who had worked in books all his life, Bill Crawford. How could we refuse a deal like that? So Bill opened New World Book Fair in 1961 on South 40th Street, near the intersection with Chestnut Street, if you know the university area. And the shop soon had a citywide reputation with really brisk traffic from young people and ongoing political discussions taking place right there in the shop. A lot of special guest speakers that Bill brought in, and a very varied and eclectic collection of books and eclectic clientele. The store eked out a minimal income stream for more than a decade before we ended up closing the shop and moving most of the stock into our ground floor 7-room apartment and the basement below us. Now, the kids were mostly out of the apartment by then, so that was fortunate for us and the bookstore. But after closing the shop, Bill managed and worked in several other similar stores in North and West Philadelphia that were maintained by other organizations. So he was still very active in the book world. And he and I together ran a mail order book business, participating in book fairs and public sales around the Quad State, we called it, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Maryland, Delaware region. We regularly set up our bookstall as part of the Holiday Bazaar of the Germantown branch of WILF, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And so sometime I'll come back on the radio and talk with you about the WILF, the Women's International League. That's a sister organization to the League of Women Voters, more radical than the League of Women Voters, but it was founded just about the same time as the League was. WILF founded in 1919, just after the big International Women's Congress against World War I that was at The Hague in Amsterdam about that time. And Jane Addams, you may know her as the mother of the settlement houses. She also founded the American Women's Peace Party, and she was the first president of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. But now I'm going off into the weeds, and I'm going to stop here, because That's enough of a story. Fanny, is that all right? Mom, that's fine. I've got to go do other things. Okay, Mom. You're fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Z. Thank you.
That was wonderful. I always loved hearing your mother. That was 15 minutes, Fanny, in case you were interested.
I know
you like to keep you like to keep records of that.
Absolutely, I do.
It's too bad I never met your mother. She could have taught me a lot.
Oh, it is too bad. You would, the two of you would immediately have gotten into arguments, and she would have.
No, I would never have argued with your mother.
Oh, I don't know. Stronger men and women than you have said that and fallen down the slippery slope.
I would have treated your mother with more respect than I even treat you with.
And we get in arguments all the time.
But I would never argue with you I would never argue with your mother. You have to remember, I was raised to respect mothers. And I really, mothers I ever argued with were the mothers of kids I taught.
Well, since you're teaching me, she would fall in that category. And she was raised to argue with all men, young and old.
So I'm sure.
She wouldn't have had any problem picking a fight with you.
Right. Then I would have treated her with great respect.
Daddy, what are you saying about me? It's okay, Mom. We're just telling jokes.
Oh, boy. I enjoyed hearing that very much. I like hearing about your parents and their work in many different fields. And I like the idea of a books, right? That kind of appeals to me, except that I would go crazy if I was alone in a bookstore all day, unless it was lots of people coming in, you know.
He was hardly ever alone. There were guys who would come in and sit and talk. I mean, he never got any work done in the bookstore.
Guessing that.
Yeah, surrounded by students who want somebody to talk to argue with. You know.
I would have loved to met your father also, because I think he and I would have had great conversations.
Oh, you would have. Absolutely.
You know, we would have had fun. You know. Anyway.
Okay. You've been listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. You can listen to 7 years of old radio programs that Stash and I have done. If you go to talltales.enlightenradio.org. And our theme today is Standout Women. And let me do just a couple calendar updates. The first one, of course, is the National Women's Storytelling Festival, March 14th through the 17th, Thursday through Sunday. March 14th begins the Zoom only section. So for one day, there will be only Zoom telling, and you can buy a ticket for just that section, or you can buy a ticket for the whole weekend. Friday night is the opening of the live performances of the National Women's Storytelling Festival. I will be there on Friday evening with a 10-minute story, and then again on Sunday morning for a 50-minute to 1 hour telling just before the story swap. So if you'd like to get on the agenda yourself for the story swap, you can go to bettersaidthandone.com/women's-festival. Or you can just go to bettersaidthandone.com and you will quickly find it. And there are all sorts of different types of tickets you can get, Zoom only, live only, a combination, 1 day, 2 day, etc. So pick out what's most interesting to you on the schedule and register. It is live in Fairfax. So I'm sure most of our listeners are not in Fairfax. So Zoom might be the best option, but you hope to see you there in person if that's possible.
And I'm assuming that there will be no male storytellers.
There will be no male storytellers, but there will be, if past, this is the fifth year of the festival. Right. So if the past record holds, that 20% of the audience will be male.
Good.
So I'm encouraging all families to come. I should say that the festival is designed for mature audiences. So if you're bringing, young teenagers, be aware that we don't know exactly what people are going to talk about once they get up there.
Do the men who attend the festival have to pass a test to be mature?
Well, I don't know of any litmus test. The men I have met at the festival in the past have all been wonderful, and I was glad they were there. But okay, we'll have to see about you, Stosh. We might have to give you a special test.
Well, I won't be traveling to Fairfax, Virginia.
Okay. This coming Saturday, March 9th, yes. Black Storytellers of Western Maryland is having their first annual anniversary event. And there will be three storytellers there at Ebenezer Church in Hagerstown. And if you want more information, you can call me at 301-730-1638, 301-730-1638, or go to my email address at fenitsky@hotmail.com, and I'll send you more information.
Okay.
The last thing I've been telling everybody is that Susan Gordon is opening Stories in the Round on April 22nd, a little more than a month away. And that's 7 p.m. on Monday, April 22nd. And you can reach me those same ways, 301-730-1638, to get more information. Tell us a story, Stosh.
Okay. And because this is in honor of women, I decided that, and we tell story, we're a storytelling program. I thought the women I would like to honor are the women other than you, women storytellers. I know a lot of lady storytellers. And I thought of my, I picked a couple of women who I've listened to in different places, not only at the National Storytelling Festival, but also at workshops. And so that I've heard stories from just incredible women storytellers who are famous in their field. And I've been fortunate to, I was tempted to say, to sit at their feet. And at one of those workshops, it was absolutely true. I was sitting on the floor and Elizabeth Ellis was sitting in a chair across the room. And I had heard her tell at Jonesboro, but then sitting in a tiny little house with a group of storytellers and listening to her in person and getting to see her up close in person was a thrill. So this is a story by Elizabeth Ellis. When I was a kid about 12 years old, I was already as tall as I am now, and I had a lot of freckles. I had reached the age when I had began to really look at myself in the mirror, and I was underwhelmed. Apparently, my mother was too, because sometimes she'd look at me and shake her head and say, "You can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear." I had a cousin whose name was Janet Elizabeth, and Janet Elizabeth looked exactly like her name sounds. She had a waist so small men could put their hands around it, and they did. She had waist-length, naturally curly blonde hair, too. But to me, her unforgettable skin, unforgivable sin, was that she had a flawless peaches and cream complexion. I couldn't help myself comparing myself with her and thinking that my life would be a lot different if I had a beautiful skin too, skin that was all one color. Then in the back pages of Janet Elizabeth's True Confession magazine, I found the answer, an advertisement for freckle remover cream. I knew that I could afford it if I saved my money, and I did. The ad assured me that the product would arrive in a plain brown paper wrapper, plain brown freckle color. For 3 weeks, I went to the mailbox every day, precisely at the time the mail was delivered. I knew that if someone else in my family got the mail, I would never hear the end of it. There was no way that they would let me open the box in private. Finally, after 3 weeks of scheduling my entire day around the mail truck's arrival, my package came. I went to my room with it set on the edge of my bed and opened it. I was sure that I was looking at a miracle. But I had gotten so worked up about the magical package that I couldn't bring myself to put the cream on. What if it didn't work? What would I do then? I fell asleep that night without even trying the stuff. When I got up the next morning and looked at my freckles in the mirror, I said, "Elizabeth, this is silly. You have to do it now." I smeared the cream all over my body. There wasn't as much of it as I had thought there would be. And I could see that I was going to need a part-time job to keep me in freckle remover. Later that day, I took my hoe and went out with my brother and cousins to the head of the holler to hoe tobacco, as we did nearly every day in the summer. Of course, when you stay out hoeing tobacco all day, you're not working in the shade. There was something important I hadn't realized about freckle remover. If you wear it in the sun, it seems to have a reverse effect. Instead of developing a peaches and cream complexion, you just get more and darker freckles. By the end of the day, I looked as though I had leopard blood in my veins, although I didn't realize it yet. When I came back home to my house, my family, knowing nothing about the freckle remover cream, began to say things like, "I've never seen you with that many freckles before." When I saw myself in the mirror, I dissolved into tears and hid in the bathroom. My mother called me to the dinner table, but I ignored her. When she came to the bathroom door and demanded I come out and eat, I burst out the door and ran by her crying. I ran out to the well house and threw myself down. Not down into the well, just in the well house. And I was still sobbing when my grandfather came out to see me and see what was wrong. I told him about how I'd sent for the freckle remover, and he didn't laugh, though he did suggest that one might get equally good results from burying a dead black cat when the moon was full. It was clear that Grandpa didn't understand, so I tried to explain why I didn't want to have freckles and why I felt so inadequate when I compared my appearance to Janet Elizabeth's. He looked at me in stunned surprise, shook his head, and said, "Child, there are all kinds of flowers, and they are all beautiful." I said, I've never seen a flower with freckles, and ran back to my room, slamming the door. When mother came and knocked, I told her to go away. She started to say the kind of things that parents say at times like that, but my grandfather said, "Nancy, leave the child alone." She was a grown-up, but he was her father, so she left me alone. I don't know where Grandpa found it. It isn't all that common in the mountains where we lived then, but I know he put it in my room because my mother told me later. I had cried myself to sleep that night. And when I opened my swollen, sticky eyes the next morning, the first thing I saw was, lying on my pillow next to my head, it was a tiger lily. I love that story.
With freckles.
Yes, I love that story. And I could, in my head, I would like to imagine that I could hear Elizabeth telling that. One of the things that I liked so much that I got to meet her in person a number of times. She came and spoke at Speak, and she also did more than one workshop that I attended, was that in person, sitting up close to a great storyteller. It was just so much better than being in a tent in Jonesboro. And one thing I've told people, that going to storytelling festivals is just wonderful. It's a great experience. But the best, for me, the best things are the house concerts. You know, going to Susan Gordon's house for house concerts, having performed there in a house concert, you know, going to your house for a house concert. Over the years, I had storytellers stay at my house in Arkansas, in Pittsburgh, and in Sharpsburg. And when I could have a group of people there at the house, and they would listen to a professional storyteller, it was always so much better. You know, even if just 15 or 20 people in the room with a professional storyteller, I sometimes think there should be a magical way to do that. And unfortunately, the big tents and the big audiences at storytelling festivals, some of the magic for me is not the same. It's much better. I try to imagine myself what it would be like to sit at my grandfather's knee, though I never met my grandfather. But I often think about when my dad told the story, even when I was an adult and I listened to my dad tell a story, it was much more enjoyable than if I was reading something that he wrote, or if that was in a room full of people, big room or something like that. I like the up close and personal storytelling. So
does that mean you're going to be hosting some house concerts coming up?
I hadn't thought about that. I wasn't planning on it. I made a promise to a beautiful woman who I happened to be married to, that I would not, when we moved from Pittsburgh and I had decided that I would stop doing things like starting festivals or a theater program or a theater group, and that I would not do that anymore. And I think I've been very good at keeping my promise. The only thing I haven't started anything. The only thing I've done is joined up with you and we've done some storytelling together, but I have not organized anything that I was in charge of and running.
Well, you know that Susan Gordon is hosting Chris Potts at Susan's house for a house concert coming up in March.
I don't know if I've ever heard Chris Potts.
Oh, she's been, I thought she had been in some of the workshops you were in, but maybe you missed those. That's the 24th of March. And she's going to portray Sarah Grimke, the abolitionist and suffragist.
Oh. No. Wow.
So well, think about it.
I
think
will.
There's still space. I'll be there. I promise to be there.
And at Susan's house.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I will think about that, and I have to look at my calendar and see what's going on, because you know how busy I am.
I know. Right. Okay. Well, do you have another story you want to? I mean, we have a few minutes left if you want to.
Well,
recording stopped.
Oh, recording stopped.
Yes, I heard that.
I don't know why. Should we call John or something?
Well, I'm going to call John. You go ahead and
talk.
Find your story.
Okay. Well, I have my story ready, but I don't want to tell the story if it's not being recorded.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's still recording. It's still recording. Go ahead. That was the AI recorder. There's two recorders. Go ahead. Just keep going.
I see. All right. So here is a story it's not too long, from a marvelous storyteller, and her cousin, Connie Reagan Blake and Barbara Freeman. They were called the Folktellers. And I was able to hire Connie Reagan Blake many years ago, along with Elizabeth Ellis, for the storytelling festival that I started in Arkansas. And Connie Reagan Blake, I've worked, gone to her workshops and got to be thrilled by her storytelling. And I wanted to do this because they were beginning storytellers back in the early 70s. And they were librarians who got together, they were cousins, and they became the Folktellers, and they were tandem storytellers. And this is something that I think is wonderful and that you and I should look into, Fanny.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. A certain Southern lady was returning home after recuperating in the mountains for 3 months. Her friend, George Ann, met her at the railway station. George Ann, has there been any news while I've been away? Oh, no, there hasn't been any news. Surely something must have occurred in my absence. Why, I've been gone for 3 months, and I'm anxious for any little bit of news you may have. Well, now that you mention it, of course, it don't amount so much, but since you've been away, your dog died. My dog died? How did my dog die? He ate some of that burnt horse flesh. Burnt horse flesh? Yeah, after the fire cooled off, he went over and ate some of the burnt horse flesh, and that's what killed the dog. After the fire cooled off? Yeah, see, the barn burned down. My barn burned down? How did my barn burn down? Well, a spark came from the house. A spark from the house? Oh, yes, now that's completely burned down. How did my house burn down? Well, it was the candles. They kind of lit up the curtains. Candles? I don't even allow candles in the house. How did candles get in the house? They were around the coffin. The coffin? Who died? Now, you needn't worry about that. Since you've been away, your mother-in-law died. My mother-in-law? What a pity. How did she die? Well, some folks say it was from the shock of hearing that your husband had run away with that choir leader. But other than that, there ain't been no news. Oh, I love it. I love that kind of thing. And because it's tandem storyteller telling, I wanted to do that because of Connie Reagan Blake, but also because I have thought for a long time, especially since we've had, we have a history of having done three plays together, three two-person plays, and audience, there's something about us the audience likes. I can't, and you must be muted because I can't hear you.
I am muted.
Okay, good. But and
sorry.
Because I wanted you to hear that compliment.
I can't imagine why they want to hear us go on and on and on.
Except that each time we've performed at Stories in the Round, we have been well received. I think they think we do well together. They probably wouldn't want to hear us if we were spending time an hour in front of the audience and we didn't know they were there listening, because we sometimes have a slight difference of opinion about certain topics. Yeah. But anyway, I think we should look into doing a tandem storytelling sometime, because I think we would be good at it. We'd have to rehearse, okay, of course, and try not to get off this track. But I, you know, that kind of thing is good. I have a experience in Pittsburgh with Michael Perry. We did tandem storytelling a few times, and the audience always really liked it, you know. And
do you have a story in mind?
Oh well, I there are a lot of stories.
Okay.
The first story I always think of is Who's One First, but I don't know if you would want to do that, since it's not normally done with a a mixed gender thing.
Yeah, but that's a buddy story.
That's a what?
A buddy story.
Yeah, except it doesn't matter. I mean, I can you imagine the Gus? I just told women's stories on the radio. and I don't do like you. I can't do voices and all that stuff, you know.
Funny.
Yeah, okay. We've been going on now for 50 minutes. I want you to know I started my timer today right at the beginning when you said 3, 2, 1.
3, 2, 1. Okay.
Right. So we should. This has been fun. I like honoring the women storytellers because there have been so many. The other woman storyteller that I had a story that was possible, but it was Catherine Windham. When I first heard Catherine Windham, I didn't leave my seat. It was at storytelling festival, and there was going to be a break. Huh?
Jonesboro,
yeah. And I honestly, I can remember just sitting there. People were getting up and leaving.
Stunned.
I was stunned, and it was the first time I ever, because it was early in my going to the storytelling festivals, it was the first time I ever had the guts to go up and talk to a storyteller, mm-hmm. you know, the professional, because I saw people doing that. And she had spoken about writing letters. And I wanted to share with her because she had said something that touched me. I had a dear friend for 46 years who has since passed. Back then, he and I were still writing to each other. We communicated. He had moved. We had spent time together. We had actually vacationed together and stuff like that. But he was living in different states after 1989 and moved around the country. And my wife and I visited him and his wife a number of places. But we wrote letters to each other. We didn't talk on the phone, and we just wrote letters. And I have two boxes of letters, big boxes of letters, you know, hundreds of letters from him.
How many years?
Pardon?
How many years?
Oh, 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, we were friends for 46 years, but the last 20 years of that friendship, we didn't live anywhere near each other. And occasionally we got together, but we would write letters back and forth and just tell each other what we were doing. And it's difficult, but once in a while, I would get those letters out. I still do and look at them because he was such a great friend and he had gotten me involved in a lot of things. He was good. He was a good, really good friend, the kind of friend who could say, "You got to stop doing stuff like that because that's stupid." And I would stop because if he thought it was stupid, I knew it was stupid. He got me into theater and stuff. And I remember going up to Captain Windham and saying, I loved your advice you gave to the audience that people should write letters to each other, that calling on the phone, sometimes you miss a person or you can't understand them or, you know, the connection not good. Writing a letter is a good way to stay in touch, and you can think about what you want to say, and you can say it properly, and you know, and so I told her about me and Jay, and she thought that was wonderful, and she said, "I hope you keep those letters. Someday when you're old, you'll want to take a look at them and relive some of that great times you had with your friend."
And now that you're old, do you read them?
I do occasionally. Yeah.
That's good.
I have
letters too, but I rarely go back and read them.
I often think, what should I do with these? I don't know his children. You know, we met as adults older adults. I don't know what good they are, but I've always been reluctant to do something, let them go, because I think they're such a treasure.
Could you find his children?
Oh, I'm sure they could. you know, I mean, there are older people now, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure they, you know, they're around, but when he passed in, I think it was, I'm not sure what year it was, maybe 2015 or so. When he passed, I happened to be able to spend the last week of his life visiting him in hospice. And the nurse, you know, he was still alive. He died at the end of that week. I was there to say goodbye to him the day he died. But, the nurse said, you know, he can hear us. He's, you know, we have medication because of pain and stuff, but he can hear us. And I said, oh, really? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, you know, we're both, I'm a storyteller, and I was going to tell him some of the things I'm going to be performing at my next show. And she said, you could tell him. And so I thought it was bizarre, but for a couple of days, I sat next to him for more than an hour each time. And I told him the stories I was working on for that performance. And first few minutes seemed a little strange, but I did that three times. And it was a great experience for me because I believed that he was hearing it. And my good friend was hearing me tell stories. And I spent time with him, which was a very nice healing thing for me. So thanks to Catherine Windham and Elizabeth Ellis and Connie Reagan Blake that I have had such great experience with wonderful women storytellers.
Well, I think you might try to find his children because they might appreciate those letters of his.
They might, yeah.
Well, I think we're out of time, which means that I have to close the show. And yes. This is fun, Stosh.
Thanks.
This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stosh Ziolkowski.
Your co-hosts for the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. We are independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland. The Storytelling Hour offers our listeners a window into the world of telling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging you, our listening community, to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for John Case and...
Mama hated diesels so bad. That's what's coming up next.
Mama hated diesels so bad. Wow.
And let me turn off the recorder at that point here.